Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
We've got a guest in that has recently written a book called The Inheritance and Poisoned Fruit of JFK's Assassination. So we'll welcome him now, Christopher Fulton, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Al. Thanks for letting me be on the show.
It's my pleasure. So we've covered the JFK inside and out 100 times, and so this is interesting. It's sort of out of the blue. I hadn't heard of you before, and even the whole inheritance, it all came out of nowhere. So now, for the listeners, in case they don't know who are you and how did you get into the inheritance?
Well, I grew up just outside the district in Washington, D.C. I was going to Annapolis to the Naval Academy there and become a career officer, as many of my family have, but I decided to go into commercial construction and wound up in British Columbia, Canada, building high-rise towers. But the people, I guess, want to know about what happened with the information that came to me, which came through Evelyn Lincoln, which was President Kennedy's secretary, and that information was transferred on her passing to a good friend of mine named Robert White, who had resided in Catonsville, Maryland.
So, did you know Miss Lincoln?
I knew about Miss Lincoln. Robert White really spent the time with her. Basically, he became basically her surrogate son. They didn't have any children, and Evelyn Lincoln was given instructions by Robert Kennedy, who had collected a lot of evidence and information on his brother's assassination. He withheld it from the investigation of the Warren Commission, withheld it from the FBI, and withheld it from the Johnson administration. And during that period, he did his own investigation on his brother's death. Within about 24 hours after the assassination, he was pretty well briefed on what had taken place. But he was trapped in the situation after the assassination and could not address it with the American public, as we were looking at a possible war with Russia. So at that time, he did what was in the best interest of the country and the American people, and went ahead and kept that information secured, and is hoping to bring that out when he reached the office of the presidency in 1968. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. And then the instructions to Evelyn Lincoln, President Kennedy's secretary, and another gentleman who was the head of the Protective Research Section of the Secret Service named Robert Balk. They were both instructed to keep this information secured and to not fall into the hands of any agency so that it would be classified. The American public would never get a chance to see it, but to keep it secured for the protection of the remaining Kennedy family until such a time that it could be brought forward. Subsequently, upon Mrs. Lincoln's passing, Robert and I found ourselves in possession of these materials that basically changed the official narrative, and it was a discovery process for us, and we were approached by many individuals about this, and then we had to try to figure out what to do.
So you didn't know really what it was that was inside this file or this item from Miss Lincoln until after she passed.
Well, the information that was retained by Miss Lincoln was a large amount you're talking about maybe 100,000 documents. You're talking about a lot of personal materials. You're talking about inside correspondence of the president. You're talking about Oval Office recordings, which were made in secret, which were put in place by Secret Service agent Balk. He did that to keep everybody on the record when he was falling. When there was a disagreement over how we were going to resolve things with Russia and Cuba. So in 1962, President Kennedy decided to keep everyone on record and put in secret recordings in the Oval Office and in the conference area, so forth, so he could keep everybody on record and keep this information of world importance on these recordings. So after the assassination, Robert Kennedy was reviewing these recordings and was utilizing this information to keep his control or his handle on the pulse of the American politics and power so that he could regain the course of his brother, but that didn't happen. So the materials were vast. It wasn't a small folder or something of that nature. It was a vast amount of material. I mean, Mrs. Lincoln was with the president on a daily basis, and other than his brother, was the closest person to him. So she was pretty much given the responsibility to keep these things secured and to keep them to keep the real story and the real information out of the hands of the FBI and the investigation that was under control of Lyndon Johnson's administration. Of course, the Warren Commission, I should mention, that came out for the American public was brought out in large regard to the Russian government putting pressure on the Johnson administration to absolve them from responsibility of the assassination. They were very concerned that there might be a first strike, which was definitely on the table, or some accidental release of a missile towards them. So they wanted the Johnson administration to take a position where they would be absolved from that. And so that's the majority of what the Warren Commission was really all about.
Wow. So I don't know where to go here. Like, how long did it take you to go through all the documents or information, or did you?
Well, it took years. But the thing that would happen to us is this was a legal transfer through court, and of course the Kennedy family was notified, and the children were notified, and the JFK Library was notified, but they really didn't understand the material that was secured by Bobby Kennedy. Nobody had access to it. So since Robert Kennedy's death, nobody really knew the weight of what was there, and even the Kennedy family, I was very surprised when I contacted them in 96, they weren't aware of it. So it was very surprising to me. So as this transfer took place, I was contacted by CSIS, which is the Canadian Intelligence Service, when I was in British Columbia. They contacted the Central Intelligence Agency about it. And Robert was contacted by President Reagan, who gave him, met with him actually in California, and gave us both instructions on what was happening and on what was going to be looked at and how we were going to be called to testify before the Assassination Record Review Board about this. And that we probably gained the bulk of the important information that Robert Kennedy had kept away from the federal government in the investigation, and there's going to be interested parties on this. So he gave us some instruction on what he thought and what should be done, and said these things need to be resolved as Americans, not to fall into the outside of a foreign government or not to come from an outside source, because it could affect the trust of the government in place and change our democratic process. That being said, that with those instructions came to me specific because I had, through my position in Vancouver, I was asked to go to Russia to help establish the flats there, bring them up to spec so that people could come in from foreign countries and work and live there for oil production. When I was there, I was called into the Kremlin. Well, it was a nice thing to go into the Kremlin and very interesting, but I was called into a meeting by someone I didn't know, and the meeting turned out to be the head of their intelligence service. As I was talking to this individual, he was aware that we had inherited this material and was basically briefing me in the Kremlin about it. It was very interesting what we were going to do with it. I said there have been many books written on this, and he quoted some numbers, but he said, now you guys have got documented the proof of this and what had actually happened and the information that Robert Kennedy had actually shared with us to prevent World War III, so what are you going to do with it? And I said, well, I didn't think it was proper discussing it that with them, and I just said, well, I thank you very much for the meeting, and I've got to go, but I sure was happy that I got out of Russia and kissed the ground when I left.
Hmm. So, well, did you feel threatened when you were there, or just uneasy?
Well, very uneasy. I mean, they were interested in talking with me because of this transfer of material, and they had been part of that process through Bobby Kennedy covertly when the assassination had taken place. They wanted to know what I knew, and they wanted to debrief me there in the Kremlin. I wasn't interested in that, and I told the Justice Department what took place there, but I just politely listened and said, thank you very much. I'm sure that you'd have a better conversation with this somebody else. And dismissed myself and hoped I could leave because I knew that the gentleman I was talking to was General Alexander Levitt. He was the head of their, I didn't know who he was, but he was the head of the security services there and had run the airport and run the military and was actually running for the presidency of Russia. And he was very interested in this. So I was very glad to be able to leave, and nobody threatened me. They had offered for me to release this through Russia with no censorship, and said that the U.S. government wouldn't take the same position. And I said again, thank you very much for your conversation, but I think I better go.
Well, what was in it, do you think, that they were so concerned about, or what do you think they thought was in it?
Well, their concern is they were made out to be the bad guy the bad people during the Cold War, and as this was building up, and of course, President Kennedy inherited a lot of this post-war concern. There were certainly plans on the table to stay the superpower of the world, and with these new weapons of mass destruction and how it was going to be handled. So I think plans of that we were exposed to, we were looking at, is a first strike of Moscow. They were looking at a first strike, and they thought that that would be a way to take out the communist concern, and that the rest of Russia would just simply fall into line if that was done. But as we came to 1962 and 1963, it fell onto the President Kennedy's desk and into the part where we were actually looking at a first strike. And Robert Kennedy had looked at the numbers of American civilian casualties on that contingency, and it was looking about 42 million American dead even on a first strike. And of course, Cuba was the catalyst for all of this. And the brothers took a position at that point to say, no, this isn't acceptable, that there is no winning side. If exchange takes place, there will be no winners. And in that case, they dedicated, President Kennedy dedicated his life to this effort. Of course, the American public is very aware of the Cuban Missile Crisis, and they've looked at best and looked at, with some, depth, but this problem went on. It went on. It didn't resolve there. And President Kennedy was forced to work outside the parameters of the intelligence briefings and outside the parameters of the Pentagon, and was doing his best to put forward his agenda on this and how to resolve the problem, which was to go to the source and to resolve this in a way that didn't result in any American lives lost. He certainly wasn't interested in the Vietnam War either, which came out of the Pentagon, which was a 10-year planned war to stop not only stop the spread of communism in Asia, but to put asunder to the Russians that we were weak in any way, that American resolve was weak. If women and children had to be taken out en masse, we would do that. We would show the resolve to the Russians that we had that ability, and we were not to be messed with. Of course, Johnson gave them that war, and President Kennedy was going to pull our advisor's back. He thought it was a war they had to fight on their own, and the he said on the recordings he was going to be the least popular president in 1964 with his own government. But obviously that didn't happen. His plans for how things were going to be put in place didn't follow through.
So now, within the papers, have you had a chance to go through most of them, and do you know the bulk of what is in all the documents?
Well, I looked at many, many things. I looked at the raw information from the that administration. These things are not censored in any way. They weren't put in through any process of censorship. So we were looking at the raw information out of the White House and the raw information from Robert Kennedy's desk, and it was very heartfelt by both of us. I was the first person to listen to the Oval Office recordings that President Kennedy had made with the individuals involved since Robert Kennedy's assassination. So here I am listening to this one-on-one with the president talking about the matters of national concern, the highest national concern, the highest national interest. And I can tell you this, it's extremely moving. I mean, he was a constitutional president doing things in a very different way, and working totally on the benefit of the American public. He thought that no American life should be used as pawns, and no American life was to be sacrificed in any way. He was very concerned about the Constitution and the well-being of the American public.
So now that you have this, and now that you've got all this, what made you decide to release this now in a book?
Well, I didn't want to die with this or leave it to my children. I thought the American people needed to know this information. My name appears on the Assassination Record Review Board investigation that happened under President Clinton. My name appears there, but there is missing information. There is a box file missing that has to do with myself and Robert White and Evelyn Lincoln and this ongoing process of what had come to a head in about 1998. So I felt that that information did not come out under the release of the National Archives, and politics is on everybody's heart and mind right now in the country. We're not in a very good place, I don't think. I think we've regressed in a lot of ways, and the assassination of President Kennedy and the assassination of Robert Kennedy are pivotal points in history that basically those policy changes and the shift in American power led us to where we are today. Kennedy believed and said that the American people would make good decisions and correct decisions if they were well informed, and I agree with that. And the American public has not been informed on this issue, and I understand the reasons why. After reviewing this material, I do see very clearly that even Robert Kennedy was trapped in this, and he had to co-agree, as it were, to keep us out of harm's way and out of war. But my father had filmed President Kennedy's inaugural speech, a very cold day in Washington, and for the General Contractors of America. And then President Kennedy had asked what you can do for your country, and this is writing this book is what I could do for my country.
Now, in the information in here, what are people going to get from this the most?
Well, I believe that the most they're going to understand from it is the fact that this was an ongoing concern for the government, that enough mud has been put on mud that they still are, the Justice Department and the other agencies, the Security Oversight Office got involved with us in 1998 and basically stated that both Robert White and myself had national security information, had to be dealt with. Robert White got the subpoena from the Justice Department to testify. That document was very all-encompassing and included me to testify, but they thought the evidence that I had was going to change the narrative, the official narrative, so they didn't want me to testify in front of the board. So they brought me in under a sealed warrant and indictment under a national security ticket, and I was put through that processing. Now, I was also interrogated in secret, which is sealed, in front of the Justice Department and the intelligence services on this so that they would get up to speed and understand who was involved and who had been contacted and who I might be working for and what the agenda would be. But nobody knows about any of that. The evidence that you know, that I possessed. Basically, it was some, I had the closest physical evidence to President Kennedy's head wounds. It was in the car in Dallas, and this was integral physical evidence that Robert Kennedy had used to stop prevent World War III, to show that the official story that came out about this wasn't correct, and that it showed complicity in the Secret Service and different individuals, including Lyndon Johnson. So Robert Kennedy was made very complicit in all this in order to preserve world peace, and I commend him on that. I can't see where he had any other choice than to do what he did. But personally, this must have been extremely excruciating and difficult decisions for him to make.
So what exactly is your theory from the information of coming like this? What do you think happened to JFK?
Well, President Kennedy, like I say, he was making a lot of decisions that were different than what they expect him to do when he came in 1960. Johnson had come in on the ticket, and Johnson was there to protect the interests of certain factions, including some of the organized crime that was in the country and other things. And then in 62 and 63, President Kennedy had changed direction. One instance of that is he was promised by the Central Intelligence Agency that when the Bay of Pigs was going to happen, that the Central Intelligence Agency came in, so we promised we're going to take Castro out. We're going to make sure that's done from the inside. Once he falls, the popular uprising will take place. We don't need a large landing force here, and this will happen in a way that we planned it to happen. Well, President Kennedy stood behind that and put forth a small landing force to handle this. We were wiped out, and of course, Castro didn't fall, so he didn't trust the CIA after that, and there was a falling out between the administration and the Central Intelligence Agency and the Pentagon. So that's when Kennedy really took it to heart to record everything and start working outside the parameters of the normal office of the president, and they were very upset by that, but going around that system, but it was working. There were plans on the table to push President Kennedy into a corner, to invade Cuba, and continue that process even after the Bay of Pigs. President Kennedy was very aware that that it may be a false flag operation that put him in a position with the American people that he had no choice but to follow through with that. But he knew that would be a mistake, so he was trying to do everything he could to avoid that. At the same time, have it handled so that we didn't go to a nuke exchange, which was ultimately the idea of a lot of people in the Pentagon, thought that was the way it was ultimately going to happen, and we should do it while the gap was heavily in our favor.
So what's the biggest secret involved in this that hasn't really been out?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of information that hasn't been out. I think the American public is... And of course, the official government position on this isn't, the Warren Commission is not correct. The Warren Commission was done for purpose and for reason. I don't think that people understand what Bobby Kennedy was facing immediately after the assassination. He certainly didn't trust the CIA. He was trying to weed out the bad elements of that when it was happening, and the FBI was the same sort of problem. He didn't have a good relationship with Hoover, but he called the U.S. Marshals. Marshal Service, there was 100 marshals, I believe, that was available to him, and they all volunteered to come protect him after that had happened at Hickory Hill. But there's just too much information to cover under a one sentence or paragraph topic that I think it really needs to be addressed over an overall view so that people can get a very clear picture of what was happening.
So there was quite a few people involved in quite a different aspect to this than just something straightforward. Is there anything to mention about Oswald in any of the documents?
Oswald, there certainly was, and Oswald has been looked at in history in a very wrong way. He's been written up very, very incorrectly. Oswald was a very intelligent young man and was a very determined young man to make a difference in the world. Of course, he made a difference in the wrong, in a way that he didn't expect, and it didn't go the right way. But he touched a lot of factions that were, one of the reasons why he was people so interested to utilize him. And of course, a lot of the information that you're seeing in Oswald's files that people rely on to gain information when they're looking into this is.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Correct. The information was placed there for specific agendas that where he was being utilized for during that period of time. So as you're looking at this, you're not getting the correct picture of Oswald, and that's a sad story in itself, and hopefully maybe that could be corrected at some point. But
well, was he part of CIA?
Question, yes.
What do you think? Oswald was part of the CIA or any of those? What's your thoughts on him?
Well, I can only say what I've witnessed or seen or read. I mean, I'll tell you this, and he was definitely an informant through the FBI, and he was giving information through the FBI, and that information was coming in as a coded number, and so that nobody could identify who he was, and that coded number was recognized and Robert Kennedy's office. So maybe I'll just leave it there. But he provided information that was good. He had provided information previously that was good. And I think he was operating and being asked to operate for agenda, and the agenda turned on him. So he was a perfect patsy for the situation in Dallas. He wasn't involved as people know him to be involved, and the history should correct that.
Hmm. And now with Robert Kennedy himself, do you think that if he would have lived longer, he would have had more of a chance to expose a lot of this?
Robert Kennedy was forced into a position that 24 hours after the assassination took place, he went from maybe the, he was the second most powerful person in the world. Some you might even consider him a co-presidency. He was that close to his brother. But he went from that position as Attorney General to an ineffective lawyer at best within 24 hours. He was cut off. And people don't realize how extreme that was of a reversal. And he was trying to figure out how to address this. Now if he'd taken his time to go a different direction, things might have gone very badly. He had to determine whether who was involved in the assassination and what kind of implications that had for the world. Once he figured that out, he could direct his attention to absolving the Russian government, who was ready to have an exchange with us and give them assurances that he would not pursue anything that would lead down that path, and he would do everything he could to make sure that that wasn't going to be a problem. Next, he had to sign agreements very orchestrated carefully that stated that he would not be testifying in any way about this. He would not be testifying in front of the Warren Commission about this, and that he, you know, he was not aware or had possession of any evidence that would change the position. Well, that wasn't necessarily correct, but he was very clever in how he did all that. But his intention, once he got, you know, he gained the becoming a senator from New York, but his intention was once he got to the White House, once he made that decision, he had agreements with Johnson, and Johnson would not accept the second nomination or for his ticket, that decided he would not run against Bobby Kennedy. They had discussed this, and he went ahead and with that, but he made a speech at a university, and someone asked him a question, caught him off guard, caught him in an emotional moment, and he had said that he would open up the files and the Warren Commission information when it was appropriate. Now, that was a bad bad mistake to make that public statement, but it cost him greatly. But the his intention, it was to release this information or talk about this and have his official investigation done on and showing what he was aware of when he reached the office of the President of the United States.
So another key member mentioned in a lot of theories on JFK was Johnson himself. Is there any determination or any sort of indication of how Johnson was involved or how his relationship with Bobby Kennedy was after the assassination?
Well, you know, Bobby Kennedy was going to bury Johnson. There was no doubt about that. He was not going to be on the 64 ticket. You know, Johnson was trying to get his concerns or problems that he had had over defense contracting and his sticky fingers involving, and he put the Kennedy's fingers in that, and they had to be careful how they dealt with that. But he certainly was going to be on his way out. But Johnson had made arrangements to give the okay that he would okay the Vietnam conflict, that would be on the table, and certainly that would be a big help in resolving the tension of between the Soviet Union and the United States, and then with Cuba, and the giving his thumbs up on a lot of different things. So he on that day he'd even made some given some orders that made sure that it wasn't a false flag attempt on the president to push him in, that he was going to be taken out that afternoon. So Johnson was well aware of the situation.
So how did their relationship go then after? Did Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy and Johnson not have a good relationship?
To the public, obviously, what you saw was a close relationship. President Johnson made sure he kept very close with Robert Kennedy and Jacqueline Kennedy. He wanted to make sure that the American public understood that there was a transfer of power, that it seemed to be a legitimate transfer of power. And calling Jacqueline Kennedy up to the front of the plane when he was sworn in, that was all orchestrated to make sure the American people seemed that this was a legitimate transfer. But behind the scenes, there was a lot of hatred and venom here. And I can only imagine what that must have felt like. But Jacqueline Kennedy, for example, had talked with other heads of state about this, one of them being France, and had a private investigation, their intelligence services do an investigation on this. Their intelligence service came back with the determination that President Johnson was involved directly, and of course Robert Kennedy had notified the Russians that President Johnson had been involved and showed them evidence of that fact, which was in my possession, of why and how he was. So the government of France, once they notified Jacqueline Kennedy of this, it said, well, listen, we'll cut off diplomatic relations with the United States. We don't want to be any part of the Johnson administration. We'll support and back you. And if Robert Kennedy wants to take power and expose this and change the power structure, that we'll stand behind it. But Lyndon Johnson had notified that the government of France that we will take war reparations and we'll go across France and dig up all our American soldiers and cause them all kinds of problems. And of course, France had to back down. But the administration, Johnson administration, was holding on very carefully to the fact that and pushing the buttons on the World War III issue so they could hold the power and continue to do so. And then, of course, as it came in with President Nixon, that he was approved by Johnson to make sure that his administration would not be diminished or be put into an illegal category or smeared in any way, and that was an agreement that was put in place before Nixon had reached the White House.
What kind of relationship did the personal secretary, Lincoln, and Bobby Kennedy have? Like, were they fairly close? Was she close with the rest of the family?
She was close with John F. Kennedy. She had been with him as a senator for many, many years. I think she was with him for 12 years, but she was very, very close with him. And so that because of that trust and that bond, Bobby Kennedy assumed that that was a someone that he would trust and someone that he would do. But Bobby Kennedy was actually a little bit, if you want to know the truth and what I've read and what I've looked at, a little bit intimidated of Evelyn Lincoln. I'm not exactly sure why, but as this progressed, Evelyn Lincoln was scared to death after the assassination. She was terrified that when Johnson had come to the office, didn't know what was going to happen, and she was scared. She had overheard through her husband, he had overheard the agents discussing him being shot at Dallas. This was in Washington before he left on the Texas trip, and she informed him. She said, "Listen, this has been discussed. He's going to be shot at." He said, "I'm aware of that. I understand that, and don't worry. My information is good, and that they can get me anywhere they want." He was, you know, President Kennedy was extremely brave about all this. I mean, he took this on as a personal the most important thing in his life. It wasn't simply just being a president of the United States and peacetime. He was looking at this as whether the survival of the world was going to continue, if we were going to have freedom or we're not going to have freedom, or how this was going to work, and took this on as a personal issue, that if he had to sacrifice his life for this, that's exactly what he was going to do, and that's exactly what he did.
Now, what in this book can you say actually describes how what's happened is shaping our world today and perhaps the future in government?
Oh my God! If you listen to the recordings, you the things that the president is talking about from everything, including using over leverage of a national security ticket to hide agendas or to hide political gain or people not having the interest of the American public in mind anymore, that this thing would go on into its own entity. I mean, everything the man says has come to fruition. We're living it. We're here. And so the words ring as clear as day if they were spoken yesterday instead of 1962 or 63. He was even ahead of the intelligence services. I was just amazed. The people that he was involved speaking with knew things in advance that what history says that he was briefed on. So I'm listening to this and saying, my God, the man was aware of that there were missiles in Cuba before he was supposedly briefed by the Central Intelligence Agency that they were there. The man was working outside the parameters of that to give him a clearer picture of the world and a way to really to work it for the betterment of the United States and the people of the United States. At the time that Kennedy was assassinated, he had a reporter or someone of that ilk talking with Castro to try to get his cooperation, gain his cooperation, and the UN inspections and all that sort of thing so that they could have a peaceful resolve to this. That was the same day that Kennedy was killed. But of course, they had a backup plan that wasn't as pleasant, and there was a 9-day countdown to this resolve when he went to Dallas, and the American people don't know anything about that. That this was, you know, his brothers were going to come into the Oval Office after him. That was the plan, and he didn't want to leave them with a worse scenario than what he was dealing with. And of course, the numbers was as these weapons increased and the masses increased, that the development of this, there'd be only more and more people killed. So he was very concerned about resolving it before he left office, and he wanted a democratic and free Cuba by 1964. But people don't, those issues aren't discussed. I don't think because they haven't been given out. They've been, it's not something for someone to do, to debate or understand or to make decisions, better decisions of where we are now based on where we were. So we've not really progressed. In my opinion, we've gone the opposite direction, and we're way farther down the line of problems and separations and divisions in this country than where we should be.
Wow. So is there anything in the book that you see or in the information that you saw that do you think would rectify and help us get more on a right direction?
If we can't openly discuss who we are as Americans and where the country's been and where we're going, we're left with this this hole or this divide that doesn't give us any foundation to work from. And I think the those assassinations are still a gaping wound in this country. And you got to ask yourself, my God, if you watch a History Channel program, or you and I are talking about this right now, or we had a certain feeling of moving in the right direction, or a certain feeling of being proud as Americans and what we were doing and what was going on, and we lost that. So the I think that the country really wants to get back to that sort of idea, and I think to do that, we've got to look at the foundations of where we went off track and decide, okay, well, we made a left instead of right, so let's figure out how we want to pick up the pieces and go and move from here. It's, of course, the Justice Department explained to me that they're not going to go backwards on this, and there's no prosecutions that's going to be gained from this, so they're not going to even pursue it. But the I don't think it should be pursued, anything other than the fact that the information should be on the table, the American public should be informed, and then the pieces can be picked up and we move forward with a better direction.
What do you hope people get out of this?
Well, I hope they understand that the that we are a great nation, and the and that period of time, and that these people sacrificed everything they had to sacrifice. There wasn't anything more they could give. They were working for the betterment of the country for us, and I think the scenario, if Nixon had been President Nixon had been in office in 1960, this could have gone very differently, or maybe we wouldn't be standing here. I don't know, but that's all hypothetical. But the I want people to understand that this is an ongoing concern, that I was involved. I've lost years of my lives. I've lost my mother. I've lost family members. I've lost friends and over this. And even up into the late 90s and 2000s, I spent time in the federal prison over this and paid a very high price. So in that regard, I know a little bit about what I'm talking about, and I hope that I can, in this book, that people can look at that, and then they can just ascertain through their filter what they will from it, but that it helps move us in a positive direction.
Now, the Kennedys now, and Robert Kennedy Jr., do they have any interaction with this or support of this, or do they talk about anything to do with the inheritance?
Well, from what I understand, they've been told the book, is out, and of course, Caroline Kennedy had been briefed on this very, not in full, but had been touched base on this in 1996. But there is some discrepancy, from what I understand, in how the Kennedy family wants to deal with this. On the one side of the fence, they've got Robert Kennedy's side, and his papers on a lot of these things, his private papers, which. My evidence involved his side of it and some of those private papers that had slipped through and actually mistakenly had gone to the National Archives. I think they were declassified around 1992. But the a lot of his information and his private papers are still being withheld to this day. They don't want to let them out. His widow doesn't want to let them out arbitrarily and until something is decided. But the family is split on this issue and how they want to handle it. And I don't know all the parameters of their connections or who... but they paid a tremendous price, and I have to respect that idea, but I also have to balance this line out of what I think the American people should understand and know versus the privacy and the respect for the Kennedy family.
Was there something that you found in the papers that people might be really shocked about? Was there some sort of something that has been... in general thought in the public, and the papers actually turn it out to be completely false?
Well, I mean, I can think of quite a lot of things, but one of the things that just came to my mind was the letters I've seen between President Kennedy and his wife just before Dallas. I mean, a lot of people say that that relationship didn't have any love in it, but I can tell you that after reading one of the letters that they had talked about having a bigger first continuing on with a family, that they did love each other, and what happened in Dallas was an extremely shocking and tragic thing for Jacqueline Kennedy. I can't imagine the loneliness. Still here?
Oh, yeah. Pause there for a second there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just need to be an incoming call, so I don't have that works on this. But I can only imagine that Jackie Kennedy, what she had gone through during that period, because she had to hold all of this back for Robert Kennedy, for the benefit of Robert Kennedy, for the benefit of the country, and she had to be very stoic, and it was a extremely difficult thing for her.
Yeah, I could imagine. So what do you plan on doing? Like, what do you hope comes from this? Like, when you're releasing the book, you're touring it now, obviously, doing talks about it. What is it you want people to get from this, or what do you want them to do? What kind of reaction are you looking for?
You know, the reactions that I've got, when you do something like this, you don't know what's going to come from it. You don't know if you're going to be a positive force or something else will come of it. But the reactions of people that have actually read the book, and this comes from all walks of life, whether you're a housewife or you're a federal judge or somebody who is very well-versed in all of this, and I've gotten all of that, the responses have been overwhelmingly positive. So in a lot of ways, that's been very healing for me. I've gone through this, a very lonely position, and I've kept this to myself for 24 years, and it's been difficult. I've had a lot of my own personal healing to do, but I thought it was important to do this, and it really is just a journey. I've tried to take people just on a journey of what it was like on the inside of this, having President Reagan involved and being briefed and learning the history of the United States that people don't know, and then trying to bring that out in 1998. Of course, John F. Kennedy Jr. had contacted me and wanted this evidence it was very important to him, and the lawyer for President Clinton. Of course, the Clintons both wrote me in prison, but I wanted to just take people on the journey of what this was like, and it was extremely unusual and kind of a difficult journey, but if I take people through the steps of this, they can put that through the filter of whatever they feel as Americans, and then come to their own conclusion, and I hope it just makes things better for the country. I've had some people that have lived through that time cry, and openly cry and weep and say, thank you for giving us some closure on this, and I was just extremely moved by that, I apologized to them. I didn't want to make them cry, but at the same time, they said, no, that was this has been very emotionally healing. So in that regard, I think that I've gotten some very positive feedback on it, and if that could be multiplied and it could have a positive effect on the country, I feel good about that, because it's not just this is a story of what happened. It doesn't belong just to me. It belongs to the American public and the American people, and I owe it to my mother, who passed away, and to JFK Jr. and President Kennedy and Senator Robert Kennedy, and of course Evelyn Lincoln, who was very stoic through this as well. The American public need to know what I was exposed to, and so they can understand it better.
So now you have a website, I understand, and maybe give that website out to people.
Yeah, the website is cmfulton.com. So that's cmfulton, FULTON.com. And if they go to the website, they can see commentary by different individuals. It gives you a little better feel for what the experience of the book may be like. And there's a short video on there that explains some of it. And they can see if that's something that interests them, or maybe somebody they know that might be interested. So I recommend that you check that out.
And the book is on sale now, I believe, right? It's out?
The book comes out November 22nd. There's been pre-sales. It is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and other, but there's also an e-book that I think is through Sony and Apple. So it is readily out there, but the release of this officially is the 22nd coming up here at the anniversary.
And that's called The Inheritance.
The Inheritance, poison fruit of JFK's assassination.
Fantastic. So now we will have this on our website as well. All the radio stations that pick it up and play will have this. So you can go to look for Chris Fulton, and you'll see him under the guest list. You'll see a picture of the book. Just one click, it take you to his website or to his books, and help yourself. And you don't mind if people get in contact with you if they have some information, do you?
No, that's perfectly fine. And I'd like to thank you for having me on today, and I appreciate that.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Again, our guest has been Christopher Fulton, and we've been talking about The Inheritance, and that's Poisoned Fruit of JFK's Assassination. And the book will be on sale in 2 days. Again, thank you.
Thank you very much, Al.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.